The council meeting chamber was simpler than Gensler had expected it to be. There was a long rectangular table in the center, ringed by a dozen padded wire mesh chairs, with another 8 or 9 chairs lined up against each of the 2 side walls. Ulyar was seated at the far end of the table, flanked on one side by Councillor Tarkosa and on the other by Councillor Keeley. Facing them from the other end of the table, the end nearest the door, were Formby, Fisa, and Bersh, the latter hunched over in his seat like someone fighting a losing battle with disillusionment. The other 3 Jeroons were seated together in the chairs along the left-hand wall, looking equally dejected, while the 3 Chiss warriors sat stiffly against the wall to the right. Each of the 2 latter groups had one of Presser's peacekeepers standing watch beside its row. The conversation, or perhaps more accurately, the confrontation, was already underway as the door wheezed open and Gensler, Rosemary, and Evelyn stepped into the room.
"Not good enough for a stock reform, B," Ulyar was saying. "The actions of your people have cost us 50 years of exile and deprivation, not to mention the loss of nearly 50,000 of our companions' lives. If you genuinely wish to atone for this atrocity, you'll need to do far more than that."
He looked up at Gensler.
"Ah, Ambassador," he greeted him gravely. "Did you enjoy your tour?"
"Yes, thank you," Gensler said, moving reluctantly forward.
"We were just discussing the extent of reparations the Chiss government will be providing in contrition for the devastation," Ulyar said.
"And as I've already explained, I cannot make the sort of agreement you seek," Formby said. "I can offer a certain level of monetary compensation from my own family's resources, the amount of which I've already stated, but I can make no promise that will bind the other families. On the other hand, the 9 ruling families had agreed to turn outbound flight's remains over to the New Republic," Gensler pointed out as he sat down beside Fisa. "It shouldn't be stretching that offer too much to include returning all the colonists as well."
"And what makes you think we want to return to that part of the galaxy?" Ulyar asked.
"Then what do you want?" Gensler asked.
"We want a ship. At least as big as one of our dreadnoughts. No, make that twice as big. Equipped with the best and most modern equipment available."
"And weapons," Keeley murmured. "Lots of weapons."
"Yes," Ulyar agreed. "Plenty of weapons and defenses."
"What exactly do you want with this new ship?" Formby asked.
"To fulfill our mission, of course," Tarkosa said. 50 years ago, we were commissioned to travel through the unknown regions to the edge of the galaxy and beyond in a search for new life and new worlds."
"Of course," Gensler said, a shiver running up his back.
"We will, of course, need to consult with our governments," he said, deciding the best approach right now would be to stall and hope he didn't improvise himself into a corner. "We'll need to discuss how to locate and deliver a ship that will suit your needs."
"Good," Ulyar said. "Go ahead. We'll wait."
"It's not quite that simple," Formby put in. "First of all..."
"Of course, of course."
Ulyar lifted a hand in an imperious gesture toward the young man standing beside the Chiss.
"Peacekeeper Olyet, you may turn off the jamming."
The peacekeeper reached for the antique comlink in his belt, hesitated.
"I'm sorry, Director, but I don't think I should do that without Guardian Presser's permission."
Ulyar's face darkened.
"Then get it," he said.
To Gensler's left, the door again slid open, and with perfect timing, Presser stepped inside.
"There you are," Ulyar said. "Release the jamming. Ambassador Gensler needs to contact his government."
"It's not the jamming that's the problem," Formby said before Presser could reply. "The fact is that communication with the outside galaxy is impossible from inside the redoubt. If Ambassador Gensler and I are to consult our governments, we'll need to leave outbound flight."
Ulyar's eyes narrowed.
"How very convenient. Perhaps you won't find it so necessary if I tell you that one of you will be required to remain while..."
He broke off as, with a squeak of boots on decking, the peacekeeper who'd taken Presser aside earlier appeared from the corridor and came to a halt at Presser's side. He grabbed the Guardian's arm and began murmuring urgently to him.
Guardian,
Ulyar demanded.
Guardian!
Your pardon, Director, Counselors, Presser said. A small matter that needs to be dealt with. I'll be back in a moment. Mara was on her knees, studying the scattered bones and trying to visualize what the owner of the Cherrick might have looked like when she felt the faint and distant sensation. She paused, closing her eyes as she stretched out to the Force. Somewhere nearby, someone had died, violently. She opened her eyes and looked at Luke. How many? She asked. Several, he said, climbing hastily to his feet. No injuries either, just deaths. Quick ones, too, as if the victims were ambushed. They had to do some climbing through the rubble at the bottom of the turbolift shaft in order to reach their car, but they'd made sure to leave adequate hand and footholds, and within a few minutes, they were once again inside. Were you able to tell where it happened? Mara asked as the car began moving sluggishly upward. No, Luke said. Someplace above us, but it all went by too quickly to pin it down any better than that. You? Mara shook her head. All I could tell was that the deaths didn't seem human somehow. The car lumbered to a halt in the storage core. Where exactly are we headed? Mara asked as they hurried through the silent storage rooms. We'll try the turbo lift Fel and the stormtroopers used to go to D6, Luke said over his shoulder. We should be able to reach either D6 or D5 with that one. Yes, that part I'd already figured out, Mara said. I was asking which of the two dreadnoughts you think we should start with. I don't know, Luke said, as they reached the turbolift lobby where they'd taken their leave of the Imperials. Fel went to D6. Jinsler and Formby are probably in D5. Pick one. The turbolift door slid halfway open and stopped. Let's make it D5, Mara decided as they squeezed inside. Sounds good, Luke said. Using the Force to pull the doors at least partially closed, he tapped the key for D5. The car didn't move. Uh-oh, he said, trying the key again. Still nothing. Terrific, Mara growled, pulling out her comlink. A quick on-off showed that the jamming was still in place. Well, so much for the easy approach. Looks like our choices are to climb the shaft or head aft and hope the turbolifts back there are still working. Or to continue around to the turbo lift Presser had us trapped in, Luke reminded her. Actually, given that we've already cut some of the repulsor controls in that pylon, it might be the easier one to climb. Probably safer, too, Mara pointed out, pushing the doors open again. Right, Luke agreed, as they squeezed back out into the turbo lift lobby and took off at a run toward the next turbo lift lobby over. It would be a little tricky to play Hilltop Emperor if the repulsor beams came back on. Mara stiffened. Suddenly, unbidden, a horrible revelation had come like a thundering of blaster bolts chewing their way into her stomach. The Jeroen ship. Bersh's farewell to the rest of his people as the Chaff envoy prepared to head into the readout. The vague and nameless puzzle that had bothered her so tantalizingly at the time. And the image of a Jeroen child triumphantly waving a red headband.